City Queer Cast.
Gays and lesbians are all the rage.
We're here and we're queer.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
We're talking mega gay.
Ooh, I like that.
I'm Peter Maverick.
I'm Amy Matheny.
This Queer Cast is brought to you in part by
Bud Light. Always worth it. American Airlines, offering the GLBT community exciting vacation packages online at aa.com/rainbow.
And Broadway in Chicago and Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. For the hottest tickets in town, visit broadwayinchicago.com.
Hey, you're listening to the Windy City Queercast. This is show number 122, and this is the first of a two-part series we have. We're calling it Windy City Queercast Intimate Portrait. And today we're starting with Miss Amy Matheny, who, this gal, she's on the stage, she's behind the microphone, and I think she makes the Windy City Queercast one of the best working experiences I've ever had in my life. It's just awesome. It's a blessing to work with her. And, she's been on the radio, God, almost like 10 years, I think, which is just, it boggles my mind because I remember where my life was 10 years ago, and I remember listening to her so many years ago on the airwaves and orienting my antenna just so I could pick up the AM radio station that they were on. But she's shared so much of her life and what's going on in the queer world with us here in Chicago. But she's a native Tennessean, and she brings every ounce of that Southern goodness to everything she does. She's driven, she's truthful, she's genuine, and to me, she's very inspiring. And that's Amy Matheny. Amy Matheny, how are you?
Aw, thank you, Peter Maverick.
Yay.
It's so odd being on this side of it.
Isn't it weird? It's a little scary. It's a little scary.
I think this was my idea. Now I'm going, what the fuck was I thinking?
What was I getting myself into?
Because I know what I'm going to say when I know when I'm saying
right.
It.
Exactly. And it just comes right out. So I want to start, we'll talk about your life a little bit, but I really want to start because we've moved, I basically dragged a lot of y'all kicking and screaming from the radio onto the Queercast. And do you miss it? Do you miss the radio?
You know, I don't. It's so funny. I was just telling someone last week that I had not been in touch with in quite a while. And they said, what are you doing? Are you still doing radio? And I was saying that I was doing podcasting. And actually, this was Honey West, and who I worked with mm-hmm. on Lesbian Gay Radio. Yeah. And I said, I love it. I love it so much. I love that it's structured. And so I have mm-hmm. a certain amount of work that I'm going to do every week. And it's more than what we were doing. More time,
yeah, absolutely.
More interviews, more conversation, more banter than we were doing on Windy City Radio. It's not as much as Lesbian Gay, but I love the flexibility of it. I love that immediacy of it. Mm-hmm. And parts of the podcasting reminds me of the old days when I was on Daily Drive Time, which when I meet people, they normally say, like you just said, I listen to you mm-hmm. on my drive home, on my commute home. Mm-hmm. I listen to you all the time. And that was really the day-to-day sharing that was so easy to do when you had 2 hours to fill from 4 to 6 every afternoon. Yeah. And I loved the time frame of that, of Lesbian Gay, because you'd kind of had most of your day. Maybe you were heading somewhere after we recorded the show to go do something that night, going to a play or going to a concert or going to dinner or going to an event at a bar. But you'd kind of had part of your day. So you were coming from a point of view or a place of reference, and you were talking to people you knew who had also probably come from most of their day.
Afternoon drive, that's what it is.
But what I love about the podcast is I love the freedom. I don't really care if I get to say fucking shit.
Although it's fun.
And I've just said it, so now my father will never listen to this. And I go, Dad, listen to that. But I'm saying, there is that freedom of not having FCC regulations. But I just love the freedom of time. Mm-hmm. I'm verbose, so I love the freedom of time. I love the freedom of when I can do it, where I can do it, Wow, that sounds sexy.
It does.
But yes, I'm very happy that you have lovingly tossed me into this
lovingly
new,
tossed
to this new shore of podcasting. I love it.
It's a good move. I think now I feel we made the right decision.
Oh, I totally do, and I love that.
It took a minute
have,
to feel that.
We have so many listeners now around the world, and I love getting feedback from people.
Yeah.
Out there, because unlike you, I don't travel that much, and so I love to know that I'm connected to other side of the world.
And you are all over the place. So let's go back to the first place in the world that you were connected to. Let's go back to Cleveland, Tennessee. Now, you were born in Cleveland?
I was born at Bradley County Hospital Tennessee, 2 weeks early. My mother had gone to, this is very Amy Matheny. I had things to do.
come on.
My mom was at her, she thought her last appointment, and they said they had waited to have me for 7 years. I had not been able to get pregnant, so they almost adopted.
Wow.
They just weren't ready for me, even when I finally came, because I came 2 weeks early. The doctor said, you need to go up to the hospital right now. The doctor's office was right below the hill, because we only had one hospital in the whole town.
It was up the hill.
And said, go up the hill to the hospital, call Leo, you're going to have a baby really quick.
Wow.
And my dad grabbed his briefcase, drove past our house, which was really close to the hospital, grabbed my mom's suitcase, and literally my grandmother, who was a volunteer at the hospital, walked me out. That is how quick I caused my mother no grief to this day, is what I always say.
So bang, bang, boom, you came right out.
Bang, bang, boom, and they wanted to name me Todd because they hadn't picked out a girl name, and they didn't pick out a girl name because back then you stayed in the hospital for a few days, and they literally were like, we have to wheel you out and we have to have a name. For the first part of my life, I was Amy Alice.
Amy Alice.
For a good 18 years. I was a double name, like Billy Ray. All those bad rednecks.
For people who don't know, put Cleveland on the map.
Cleveland is in the southeast corner of the state of Tennessee. It is right on the border, close to North Carolina and Georgia. And it's right along the valley area of the Smoky Mountains. So I grew up around mountains. I grew up around the Ocoee River and the Hiwassee River. So a lot of mountain water and lakes. And I grew up I didn't grow up on a farm. I grew up in a small neighborhood, but my grandmother had a farm, literally a 4 minute drive or a 15 minute walk.
Oh, wow.
So I kind of grew up on a farm. Farm-like life.
Mm-hmm. And what was school like? How big, how small?
I don't know. You know, see, what's normal to me, I don't even question.
Were there five other kids?
We had probably in elementary school 20 kids
in a
class, and maybe three classes per class. So like maybe 50 or so, 50 or 60 kids each grade.
Big enough school.
I mean, you know, Cleveland back then, the city proper was probably about 25,000, 30,000, and now it's close to 40 or 50,000, if you don't include the county, the city.
The city itself.
Which was a dry county. You know, we didn't have any alcohol where I grew up.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So, you know, I had to drive to Chattanooga. That was the biggest city. So we didn't have any bars. We didn't have any restaurants. We just literally got a liquor license in Cleveland, Tennessee about 3 years ago.
Wow. And on the weekends, what were you doing when you weren't in school?
When I was a kid?
Yeah, when you were a little kid.
I was playing, what was a spotlight? Was that what we called it? We played with flashlights. I played kickball at night. We just ran around the neighborhood. I went to a lot of drive-ins, not in a car, sitting on a hill on my friend had her house was, overlooking where the drive-in was, her backyard. And we would sit on one of those things where I don't even know if they have these on, I don't know if they even have these in people's yards anymore, but it had like four or five chairs on it. And it was around like there was a circle in the center with a pole, and there were four or five like floating chairs, and you would kind of pump your chair with your hands and your feet and it would spin around. She had one of those in her backyard.
Yeah.
And we would sit in the backyard.
It was all like posted.
Yeah, it was posted in the ground, but you kind of, little metal chairs.
But you could move.
Yeah, and it would centrifugally force you to, everybody would turn around in a circle. I can't go in a circle anymore, but I used to love to do that when I was a kid. But we would sit up on the, you know, up on the hill, and we would watch the drive-in. And then I had another friend who had a pool, and that was a really big deal. Yeah. And her and we, I swam a ton as a kid in the summer.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know you.
I was outdoors a lot.
Outdoors a lot.
I mean, well, I wasn't a tomboy,
right?
But I was very a loner. I was much of a loner as a child. So I would. I, you know, had imagination things that I would keep doing until, little stories and adventures and things like that until my father whistled. And when my father whistled, I could be really far away and he would whistle and I would come bounding over the hill. And I,
boing, yeah, boing, boing,
it was about
boing,
dusk, you know, and the fireflies come out. It was very much like a movie in that way. I had a very idyllic childhood in that way.
Well, I know you as a very spiritual person. So was it always church on Sundays or
it was church? I grew up in the United Methodist Church. My father was basically like a lay minister. So I just mean people asked him to preach a lot and talk a lot. And he taught Sunday school. I mean, I think for... you know, I don't know. It was just always a really, I mean, I'm Southern and the town that I grew up in is far more religiously conservative than I was. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of Church of God and Church of God of Prophecy International headquarters was in Cleveland, Tennessee. I don't know if they still are, but which is a much different faith than mine, but definitely had a lot of church all around me, Baptist, Methodist. I mean, those were the biggest, maybe some Episcopalian. I only knew one Catholic family. I never met anybody Jewish except friends of my families who lived in New York. So I thought all Jewish people were in New York. and I didn't even really know what a Jewish person was. I didn't know when I was young. Mm-hmm. So it was really a bit, it was an interesting environment, you know, growing up in the South, you know, and being a gay person. Mm-hmm. And being, I think, a pretty much a civil rights activist and liberal person, you know, I grew up in an interesting environment where race relations were definitely had strata.
Yeah,
you know, it was a very big division between white and black, and there wasn't really any other colors to be seen. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know anything about anything gay until I was.
Right.
Way out of there.
We'll get to that because I definitely want to get to that later in the show.
But yeah, I mean, church was a big part of I sang in the church choir. I was the loudest singer. And then I stopped wanting to sing in the church choir.
Why?
Because I was loud. I was just loud. I had a big, huge voice. And
go Judy.
And I liked Sunday school, but I was kind of a know-it-all. So
why did you leave? Did you know you wanted to leave?
Well, I left to go to college originally. I didn't leave the South though to go to college. So I did look at schools outside of the South. I wanted to go to a small liberal arts school. I thought I was pre-law. I wanted to be an attorney. How the fuck did I end up here? I wanted to be an attorney. And even though I did theater and did perform in high school, it didn't seem like a viable, realistic option. Mm-hmm. So I looked at small liberal arts schools. I was interested in a lot of things. So I wanted a liberal arts education and then I wanted to go to law school and get really specific. And, I looked at schools in Pennsylvania. I looked at schools in Florida. I looked at schools in Virginia, Ohio. My brother had gone to Rhodes College in Memphis, Tennessee, and he really wanted me to come and hang out with him and, see his school. And that was the whole reason I would never go to Rhodes College because it was his school. And I literally fell in love with it. My brother and I had very different experiences, but it was at Rhodes that I got involved in theater and decided that theater was going to be my, I already knew it was my passion, but I decided that it was going to be possibly be my career or I was going to give it a shot. That's about the best you do when you say you're getting a theater major. And, I, at that point was a freshman, and I had gotten cast in the lead in the musical as a freshman. It was kind of a big thing. And then I got cast in Les Liaisons Dangereuses as young Cécile, the young nubile, yeah, ingenue, by one of the theaters in the city of Memphis. And that's when I changed my major. I came to Chicago to look at Northwestern, and I went to New York to look at some conservatories. And, you know, I'm not patting myself on the back, but I got in all four places I applied and then decided to stay where I was. Because I loved where I was. I was getting great education. I was getting great opportunities and I had a lot of attention. And at that time, I just kind of wanted to be a bigger fish with a lot of resources. And I had a lot of special care and attention. But something about Chicago, I always knew. My family had been in business in Chicago and I never wanted to go to New York. When I started working professionally in theater, which I did for a few years out of college before I moved here. I lived in a lot of cities and lived where I got cast in shows, and I met a lot of New Yorkers, and most of them were my buddies, were friends, were gay guys. And they all kept saying, "Oh girl, come to New York, come to New York, come to New York." And I was like, "Why would I come to New York? It's expensive. It's hard. I'm not you. I'm not a guy."
Right.
Guys have an easier time, I think. And you're here in Florida with me, or you're here in Pennsylvania with me, or you're here in Utah with me. You're not in New York.
Right. Exactly.
You know? So, the really long answer is that I'd always liked Chicago. I thought it was a working city. And after living out of my suitcase in a number of different small American cities and mid-sized American cities, I decided that I wanted to move to a city that even if I couldn't make my living being an artist, I would be surrounded by fantastic art and be able to live. And that is why I moved to Chicago.
Fantastic. Well, we are going to take just a slight little break now.
Yep.
And we are going to come back with more because we got a break for news and we got some other things to talk with you about theater. Oh. How apropos. But we will be back with more Amy Matheny Intimate Portrait.
The overture begins. The music swells. You're swept away to the Piazza Michelangelo to discover the light in the piazza. Broadway's most romantic new musical in years, and the winner of 6 2005 Tony Awards. As if by fate, a sudden gust of wind blows the hat from a beautiful young woman into the grasp of a handsome young Italian, and it begins. The passion, the romance, Broadway's ultimate love story, The Light in the Piazza. Critics have hailed it a must-see, a consummate work of beauty, with the most romantic score of any Broadway musical since West Side Story. It won the critics. It won the Tonys. Now let it win your heart. The Light in the Piazza.
This romantic new musical is now playing at the Auditorium Theater through July 22nd. For tickets, call 312-902-1400 or visit BroadwayInChicago.com.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Edible Underwear Maker.
Mr. Edible Underwear Maker!
Your true genius combined two of man's favorite things, panties and food.
I can taste it now!
They're a snack, they're underwear. They're a snack and underwear. Brilliant.
Two treats in one.
Gorgeous grape, rock my world raspberry, bodacious banana.
26 flavors.
And nothing says, I want you, like a man with a mouthful of underpants.
I want you, flavor.
So crack open an ice cold Bud Light, Mr. Edible Underwear Maker. Because thanks to you, when it comes to panties, extra large means extra yummy.
Yummy.
Beer at Isabu, St. Louis, Missouri.
Culture Club. Culture Club. Culture Club.
Theater.
Music.
Dance.
Art.
Performance.
Provocative.
Hilarious.
Exciting.
Queer.
Innovative.
Campy.
Edgy.
Original.
Get some culture in your life.
Join the club.
For the week of July 16th, 2007, you are in Chicago's Culture Club.
Looking Glass Alice is playing now at its home at Looking Glass Theater Company in the Water Tower Waterworks after an East Coast tour. Adapted by David Catlin from Lewis Carroll's Alice's Adventures in Wonderland and Through the Looking Glass, Looking Glass Alice is an acrobatic and dizzyingly playful show for all ages. Variety called it extraordinary. For tickets, call 312-337-0665 or visit lookingglasstheater.org.
Northwestern University presents three new musical theater events at its Summer Music Theater Festival. The festival's featured musical, In the Bubble, directed by Michael Greif, director of Rent on Broadway, is playing July 27th through August 12th. Don't miss this funny and touching coming-of-age story that captures the pull between safety and growth and the risks that accompany change. To get started, only $25. Call 847-491-7282 or visit tic.northwestern.edu.
Hey, pigs! The love goddess Judy Tenuta comes to Chicago for one night only, July 28th at the Lakeshore Theater, 3175 North Broadway. Buy your tickets now for either the 7 p.m. or the 9:30 p.m. show on the 28th. The love goddess will delight, play accordion and make you a slave to her world. For tickets to Judy Tenuta, call 773-472-3492 or visit lakeshoretheater.com.
And for more Culture Club, visit windycitytimes.com. And this is your Windy City Queercast News.
In Florida, a bipartisan organization made up primarily of heterosexuals has put together over $1 million in 2 months to fight a proposed anti-same-sex amendment to the state's constitution. The group, Florida Red and Blue, is led by Bob Farmer, a former treasurer for the Democratic National Committee, and John Kislak, the former financial director for Republican Attorney General Bill McCollum's campaign.
And in Fort Lauderdale, city commissioners have agreed to make space in a city building for a gay interest library, the Stonewall Library, over Mayor Jim Nagle's objections. He's all over the news. Nagle, who was outvoted, said, quote, "I feel troubled that a city building would be housing materials with content we have arrested people for in the past."
Ugh. In Virginia, Thomas Donovan is fighting the state's Workers' Compensation Commission for his partner's death benefits. Philip Pettis worked as a mechanic but suffered a severe back injury in 2001 and died in 2004. Donovan, who suffers from diabetes and chronic fatigue syndrome, depended on Pettis financially. Lambda Legal, who is representing Donovan, has appealed to the Virginia Court of Appeals.
UPS has decided that a New Jersey gay couple will not get the same benefits as a couple married in Massachusetts. Reportedly, the company's decision boiled down to the word spouse, which New Jersey does not use for its couples that are joined in a civil union.
Harlow Quadra and Joseph Kirekis will be extradited from Virginia Beach, Virginia to Philadelphia to face charges of murdering gay porn producer Brian Charles Cochis. Cochis was the owner of a gay adult film company called Cobra Video. Authorities say that Quadra and Kirekis killed him to eliminate a rival.
In Chicago, the New Life Shelter, a place for the homeless, has agreed to no longer practice sexual orientation discrimination, and that employees would undergo sensitivity training after Michelle Wang said that she was denied entry because she's a lesbian. Earlier this year, the ACLU of Illinois filed an official complaint with the city's Commission on Human Relations.
The Iranian government has confirmed that a man was executed by stoning last week for committing adultery, and more than that 20 more men would be executed for everything from rape to homosexuality. During a crackdown in May, Iranian police arrested about 1,000 people.
Out actor Neil Patrick Harris, star of TV's How I Met Your Mother, is in talks to voice The Flash in the upcoming movie Justice League, The New Frontier. In addition, Harris recently taught a master class at Tampa, Florida's Broadway Theater Project, a musical theater arts education program for high school and college students.
Nick Starchevic, a former pro football player currently on TV's Big Brother 8, has admitted to some same-sex action and has committed some on the show as well. Starchevic recently said that on the show that he has performed oral sex on a guy. In addition, he has been spotted spooning Joe, one half of the gay former couple that is also competing on the show. Is he merely working an angle, or is there more than meets the eye?
And Tori Spelling can now officiate weddings, having been certified online. Recently, Spelling officiated at a same-sex union at the B&B. She and husband Dean McDermott run in their series, Tori and Dean in Love.
Yuck, yuck, yuck. Wah, wah, wah. And that's your Windy City Queercast News.
Taking a good look inside her head.
Uh-oh.
It's a little weird, isn't it?
You're going to ask me some dirty questions.
I might ask you some dirty questions, but I might ask you some fun ones.
Revealing. Are you going to make me cry?
I hope not. I hope not. But I am going to ask you something pretty serious because I think I'm always fascinated by this answer, and I actually have asked a lot of my friends this question.
Okay.
What was your first experience with death?
Wow. My first experience with death. Wow, you may make me cry. My first experience.
I don't intend to. I hope you know that.
No.
I think it's a
very
telling
question. My first experience with death was my grandfather. Other people had died, that other grandparent had died, but I was not born. My grandfather, my papa, Ray Jackson, he died when I was 10 years old. And I remember being in elementary school and my father and my uncle picking me up from school, which is very strange, and them driving me home at the end of my day. And my uncle dropped me and my father off, and my father telling me in before we actually walked into my house. And I was so devastated. I was so sad. I had a very big, strong reaction. I was very close to him, and I was the only granddaughter. And he lived on the farm that I mentioned earlier with my grandmother, who's still alive at 90, 98. So she survived him 30 some odd years. Almost, or 25. But, I just, I used to fish with him, and he was my buddy, and we were really close, and the family all laughed, don't let Ray drive with Amy in the car alone. I mean, he was a horrible driver, which I am. He had a big old Cadillac, and, he was an amazing man, and he, created a family business that is very successful and, afforded me a lot of comforts. And so I really value him, but he was a big energy in my family. And so he was my first experience with death. And the interesting thing is, and I'll tell this story, I've never told this story to, I've told this story, but not to, definitely not never
to the masses.
Yeah. when I was that summer, he died in December 2nd. Is that right? December 2nd, I think. And that summer following, I went to summer camp for the first time. Summer camp became a very big part of my life. I would go away for a month and eventually 2 months, but I was 10. I was young, nine or 10. And I could not sleep for the first 8 days of camp. I mean, I was horrible. I had horrible nightmares and horrible homesickness. And I kept writing everybody telling me to, I finally wrote my grandmother. I was like, don't tell mom and dad, just come and get me. I mean, this letter like was this hilarious story in my family. Oh. But one night my grandfather came to me.
Oh, wow.
And it's the only time I've ever had something like that happen. And he did not speak to me, and I saw him, and it terrified me, but I stared at him for a while, and he was in the cabin. It was middle of the night, and I was awake. Nobody else was. And I slept every night after that. And so he's a very powerful presence in my life in many, many, many ways. And so that's that was my first experience with death.
It's a strong one. And I think always that first mark, positive or negative, that's never an answer. It's never a binary, positive or negative. It's just strong on people's lives.
I've been very fortunate. I still have a lot of people in my life and I've lost people, but I have a lot of family still in my life, which is a huge blessing.
Yeah, absolutely, definitely. Okay, so easier on this.
Okay.
Your first pet you ever had, because I'm also a pet person, and I know you have both a dog and a cat.
I have a dog and a cat now. I had cats. We had kitty cats. I did have a dog named Lassie, who was a boy. It was a boy collie named Lassie. But that would have been my first dog. They used to sit me out in the yard, and I was under the age. He ran away at age when I was like 3 or 4, but he used to sit on the lawn with me, and they didn't even have to watch me, because Lassie would protect me.
The dog would.
So
just
I had
take
a collie, and
you.
It's interesting because now my dog looks a lot like has a collie kind of face. She reminds me kind of that dog.
Oh, so.
But we
so.
Killed a lot of cats, and we had we had Frisky 1, Frisky 2, Frisky 3. We just kept naming them Frisky, and they just had numbers, so we have to describe them by what their colorings were.
Oh no!
But that was the only dog I ever had until my current dog.
Wow.
Yeah.
Long time ago.
Yeah.
Long time ago. When you, what I've noticed about a lot of people who, and this is a sort of blanket generalization, but I'm just going to put it out there, that the communities are so strong and they meet a lot of people's needs that people tend to stay in the South, or travel through the South. Well, I mean, was that your experience?
You're always Southern. You know, when I was in the South, when I chose to go to school in Memphis, I did everything. I tried to, that was when I lost my accent. I took classes to lose my accent.
Serious answer.
No, I took classes from a woman. My mother saw Good Morning America, and she drove me an hour and a half, to lose my accent. And if I've had a cocktail, it'll come right back out, or if I'm talking to one of my family members or someone Southern. But yeah, they paid money to have me lose my accent. If you heard me, oh God, they're old tapes of me. I was. but when I lived in Memphis, I didn't listen to country music. I didn't want to have anything to do with, I wanted to get to Chicago. I wanted to visit New York and see shows. I did not want to be Southern. I moved out of the South and I became so Southern. I bought cowboy boots and I listened to country. I moved to Chicago and I'm listening to like US 99.
Oh.
I mean, there's just something, I'm making sweet tea in my kitchen. I mean, there's something that, you are just, I am a Southerner. I am almost a Southerner before I am anything else. And I don't know how to tell you what that means unless you're Southern and you know. I miss it. I yearn for it. I yearn for the way the South smells, the people. I yearn for all the good things of the South. And there now what I know is I definitely had my early my late teens and early 20s, you know, oh, there's so many bad things about the South, and there's bad things about everywhere.
Absolutely.
But there's a lot of beauty in the South, and I try to carry that forward, and I do have a nostalgia for that.
Were you guys like a little road trip family when you were going?
We did not travel that much. We really didn't. We went to Florida a lot because it was right down I-75. My father, had horses, so we would go watch thoroughbred horse racing a lot when I was a kid. And that was a lot of my summers. But no, and I went to camp, so we didn't do a lot of traveling. I mean, I remember going to Washington, D.C. and just feeling like I was walking from here to hell. It was like, all I remember is walking. You know, I've never been out of the continental United States, which I am ashamed to say. I've been to the Turks and Caicos Islands, but I've never been out of the continental United States, which I am ashamed to say. But I've been to a lot of the United States now as an adult. But
get your passport, honey. Let's
I've got a passport. I don't know what I'm waiting on.
So what was the best vacation you were ever on?
Oh, well, I I have so many. I really love going to small towns. Mm-hmm. I love popping into places that I don't expect to pop into. So I couldn't even probably name some of those. You know, finding a thrift store, or finding a really great breakfast place or luncheon place. You can find a lot of those in the South. But I really love the Turks and Caicos Islands. I started going to the Turks long before they became really trendy.
Destination.
And, yeah, like before Ben Affleck and Jennifer Garner got married there and Bruce Willis like bought an island essentially and all that kind of stuff. I was going there and I love it there. I think it's gorgeous. And I also live North Carolina. I can go to the Blue Ridge Parkway. It's my favorite trip.
It seems very peaceful there too.
Yeah.
It just seems very, very peaceful. So you get to Chicago and then somehow you're on the radio. Did you choose Windy City? Did Windy City choose you, or how did that all come to fruition?
Well, how I was doing theater and I was doing an operetta and the costume designer was a lesbian and we were talking and I was very openly gay. And she said to me, "Hey, I know this guy and he has a gay radio show. Would you ever do any commercial work for him?" And I was like, "Sure." And within a month or so, Alan Amberg called me, who started created Les by Gay Radio. And he called me into an audition for a Burt Wyman Ford ad. It was going to be the first ever same sex car ad.
Wow.
And definitely in the city of Chicago. And I got cast as one of the girls going to buy a car in a couple, you know. And then I didn't think anything of it. I mean, I got paid a little check, which was great, and left. And then what happened was, I remember I was sitting in Steppenwolf Theater and I got a page back when we had pagers.
Oh, didn't you love the pager?
Yeah. And Alan called me and he said, "Hey, I just recorded an ad and it sounds like ass and it's awful. And I remembered you and I really thought you'd be great and I'm wanting to know what you're doing tomorrow. And could you come do this?" And I was like, sure. And I went and did it. And, I did it in a quick take and he started talking to me and said, I've been looking for somebody to be a weather girl with a brain to tell people what's going on for a segment called What's Happening, like daily what's going on in Chicago. And he said, "I'd actually like you to do it." And that's how I fell into radio and how I fell into hosting radio. I mean, I had no experience except talking on the telephone. I mean, that's it. And singing into a microphone some. But, and I didn't know anything. I mean, I don't even know if I read the gay papers that much, you know. I mean, I was gay, but, I did not think I was political. And so I started having to read the papers and find out, you know, what's a swim club that's gay and what's a running club that's gay and what's going on in these bars and, you know, all that stuff. And so I really got to know the community by trying to tell people what was going on. And eventually...
So you had to self-produce that segment?
Yeah, I self-produced it. Wow. I had a producer who recorded it, but he gave me kind of my intro music and outro music and my bed of music underneath it. But yeah, I did all the copy. And I did, I did 5 each week. I went in and recorded all 5 of them on one day. So I was in there about an hour. I got it all done in an hour and was out of there. And one day I was there recording and I normally got there in the morning and did it early on a Monday for the whole week or something like that. And my schedule had me get there really late in the afternoon and they're about to go live on the air. And Alan was like, "You know, why don't you come in and chat with us?" Well, I am so blonde in some moments because I came in, started chatting with him, talking to him. And then I went, "Wow, I just came out on AM radio, no consciousness." Cause mine was, before I was, "I'm Amy Matheny." I was just, "Hey, this is Amy and this is What's Happening." For the longest time, I didn't say my last name. And so it just, I wheeled in, we started talking, something was said about my beaver or a beaver or something. I mean, we're just the crafty beaver or something, which is a hardware store in Chicago. And the rest is history. He loved me and he was like, I want to start teaching you how to do this. And so I just learned by hanging out and talking.
Fantastic. So you mentioned that was your coming out to the moon.
Surprise.
Right. But if we were rhyming back, you know, you dated boys. And
I did. I always had a boyfriend from the seventh grade, Stephen Lay. He mowed lawns to buy me little matching hair bows, belt buckles, and purse attachments. The ones that had the buttons, the purses. Yeah. He mowed lawns to buy me things. Oh. So I had him well trained. But I had long term boy relationships from the seventh grade. With one break in the ninth grade, I didn't date anybody in the ninth grade, but I went to the dances. And then
I'm sure your dance
all
card
the way until I slept with a woman, almost.
So was it, oh, I think I need to sleep with a woman now, bang? Or was it, oh, I'm dating a boy, but I just slept with a woman? Or was it, I slept with a woman, oh my God, I'm gay, screw men. Not literally.
It was, oh, here's a bottle of champagne. let's play truth or dare, kiss a girl. Oh my God, that was amazing. Yeah, I've always kind of looked at hot women in movies. Okay, maybe I'm bisexual. Mm. That's how that went down. Mm. I was bisexual for about 3 months. And then I was like, nope, I'm gay.
So you were coming out in Chicago?
No.
No?
No, I was coming out in Memphis. Actually,
you were coming out at school.
Girl came out in Utah. I had some big love in Utah.
Well, then.
Yeah, I kissed my first girl in Utah. And
the most conservative state in the entire fucking union, I think.
It's just kind of Amy Matheny, though, really, honestly. Then I came back from my senior year of college. I didn't really struggle with being gay, but you do have kind of a, it's an important part of your identity. So there is a jiggling through your whole psyche and your whole self. And my senior year of college, I would not say I was really out. I was in a sorority.
Which one?
So I was a Chi Omega.
Yay.
Chi-O, it's off to bed we go. I made out with a woman in my sorority house. there are titillating stories I could tell you. But
this one time at band camp.
Yeah, this one time at band camp. Yeah, but I guess I came out, at 20.
Yeah.
And I did not come out to my parents for a number of years after that. Actually, I had to say, you know that radio work I've been doing for the past 2 years? Oh. Well, it's a gay radio show. Yeah, they didn't even know that. So
really?
They kind of had no choice.
Yeah.
You know, they had a child in media who was openly gay. Yeah. So So I guess 20. It was kind of a bisexual period. I dated a lot of gay men near the end. I came to find out as
they
broke on through to the other side. Yeah, we all did. We kind of danced in the bisexual bars.
A Kinsey 4.
Yeah.
And then working your way over.
Yeah, I was dating I dated a lot of gay men. And actually, one of my boyfriends that I dated for the longest time is a gay man, too. And we're still very, 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 very close.
Hmm. Oh, interesting. Was it rough with your parents being so involved in the church?
My mom took to it like a dream, which surprised me because I had been a debutante and I had been raised a very proper Southern lady. I don't know why I couldn't be a lesbian and be a proper Southern lady, but in my head, those two did not seem to be on the same agenda. My father had a lot of problems with it. Mm-hmm. I got the hate the sin, love the sinner conversation. I've talked about that quite a bit on the radio. And my father really changed. My father really sought through Bible and reading and listening to people and just getting to know my friends and people in my life, who I was and that I had always been this person and, it wasn't anything to be scared of. And so he reconciled himself to that. And so, it was difficult for about 6 intense months. We kind of did an intensive, my father and I. He had many trips to Chicago and, we worked it out.
Mm-hmm. Now you came out and then got to Chicago or
I came out and then moved to Chicago. I lived in Memphis openly gay for a couple years. And when I was doing regional theater, I was very gay. I was always the only lesbian around, a lot of gay men in theater. And then I moved to Chicago and that was just like, oh my God. I remember driving up and looking at apartments and my father was with me and we were looking at DePaul and downtown and all over. And then we walked in, we came into Lakeview, and I started seeing flags and Bad Boys and unabridged books. And I was like, this is where I want to live. My dad was like, are you sure? It's real nice down there near DePaul, maybe in like DePaul area. And I was like, no, I want to live up here. So I moved into the neighborhood where you live mm-hmm. and where we record. I lived here for 5 years.
Wow. What surprised you the most about the city when you got here?
A water. I never thought about this being a water town. I really didn't. And that sounds so stupid, but I was so excited that there was water here. And
was it water in Cleveland?
Yeah, rivers. And I love water, and I love river water. Mm-hmm. And I just didn't think about Chicago River, Lake Michigan. I loved lakes. We had a lot of lakes and a lot of rivers, you mm-hmm. know. And now Lake Michigan feels like an ocean, but I love that.
Can't really see the other side.
I loved that. And I loved how green it was. I didn't really expect that maybe as much as it is.
Fantastic. So let's play a couple of fun little what ifs. So you're driving around and you see a giant strip mall. What store would make you stop?
TJ Maxx.
TJ Maxx. Attagirl. Are you a good driver, or do other people think you're a good driver?
No one thinks I'm a good driver. my insurance guy, Paul, knows I'm not a good driver. My rates go up and up and up. Yeah, I've got a lead foot. I have a lot of road rage. And I drive a really big car that protects me and not many people around me.
I like that. What do you love? And I did print this out. I know this is...
No.
So what do you love to eat? And I don't mean that.
Sushi. Sushi?
I mean, I guess what's your favorite meal? But like, I don't even want to generalize it to just
if calories did not matter.
Yeah, absolutely.
I love a good Southern spread, you know. I love
So what's your Southern spread like?
Well, probably some turkey and gravy, chicken and dumplings, fried okra, which I can eat like popcorn, like candy, like anything. Great fresh summer corn that has been frozen because a year is good. A peach cobbler, which I will be having this weekend with my grandmother.
Yay.
She saved a bag of frozen peaches. You know, canned food, homemade pickles, you know, dinner rolls. God, I could just go on. You know, I mean, I love that
big giant spread.
I love that, you know, casseroles, broccoli casserole, squash casserole, anything made with mayonnaise. If calories did not matter, that, but what is very satisfying to me to eat, and I crave a lot, is I crave salads a lot. And that's not a sexy answer, but I really do. I love them.
It's interesting.
And it's in my diet.
And it's on the thing. So tell me something over time, I think time changes us so much. And tell me something you've learned about yourself pretty recently, if you care to share.
Wow. Something I've learned about myself really recently. I've learned that, God, that's a profound question, because I have learned some things recently.
I know. That's what I'm asking.
I have learned recently that I've always known I was a control freak. I mean, I am a very control freaky person. But I am learning a lot of compassion. And there's a part about control that is based in fear. So I think lately I've been learning a lot of what I'm fearful of. And I think of myself as a pretty courageous and brave person, but we all are driven by fear in one form or the other. And I've kind of copped to that. And what I've learned about fear is that it causes me to be, not authentic. And I really want to be an authentic person. And, you know, that's been important to me when I'm talking on the radio. It's been important to me as an actor. It's been important to me as, and so now I'm starting to learn, not with these labels, what it means to be authentic, but with my responses, what it means to be authentic and not being ruled from a place of fear, and self-will, I guess, that what makes me comfortable, you know, to try to look at a person or a place or a situation and have compassion for the situation and understand that potentially I'm right in the moment I'm supposed to be in, even if that's being uncomfortable, even if that's being sad, even if that's having a lot of feelings, even if that's having not any feelings. So that's it. I think I'm starting to learn how to sit with myself and sit with my authentic self. Because when I don't, then I become controlling, and it is less than who I am capable of being. It's a very esoteric way to answer your question.
No, but
not many specifics, but it's truly something I'm...
It's a good way, and it actually leads me into my next question. So why do you wear so many hats? Why do you do the...
Well, this is the million-dollar question.
This thing,
you know, and I would have said, oh, I just love wearing lots of hats. I get really bored. And these answers will all be true to me. Today, I don't know that there are not a lot of masks that stop me from not being authentic. And that's probably a self-actualized way of looking at myself. The act of sitting still that I find myself, sitting still, being uncomfortable, being trying to find quiet and stillness within myself. And this can be happening in a loud, bustling police concert, you know, at Wrigley Field. It doesn't mean I'm going in meditation and silence for 2 hours, you know, in lotus position. So I don't know. I would have said up until every day of my life, up until today, weirdly enough, or even this past week, I would have said, I like it. And I like wearing lots of hats. I get bored very easily. I'm interested in a lot of things. I find that I'm good at a lot of things. I'm kind of, you know, master of none and proficient at lots. And those would all be true. But I also am starting to wonder if it's also about just thinking I'm enough in just not even wearing a hat.
Heavy, heavy, heavy.
taking this to a contemplative place.
And I think what I want to finish with, because it's one of the things you have been doing for many years now, why do you still want to work in the queer media?
Wow. I ask myself that question too. And I always tell myself when I don't like it, I'll leave. And I'm a creature of habit, and I don't change things very frequently. You know, it's funny. I just came from going to the eye doctor, and I've been wearing the same kind of contacts for 22 years. And my eye doctor about fell over. He was like, I think we can get you some lenses now that let your eyes breathe a little better. And I'm like, well, nothing's ever bothered me. So why, if it's not broke, don't fix it. Right. And I'm kind of like that with my career now. I've never thought that this would be a career. You turn around, it's almost been 10 years and it's a career. And, I don't know. I love talking to people. You know, I love connecting. I love communicating. I am a communicator. I am a connector. Mm-hmm. I am an adventurer, and I am a wanderer for somebody who's never left this continent. And this allows me to do that. That allows me to do all of that. And I think, you know, I think it's a spiritual thing. Yeah. Weirdly enough, with all the feuding and fussing and fighting that goes on, maybe in the queer media, it's a spiritual thing for people to speak truth. And I talk about that a lot. And I love interviewing celebrities, and I probably more love interviewing people that, you know, they did something small, or there's some reason I happen to be across from them talking to them.
Absolutely.
And getting to know them. And when that becomes boring, then I guess I will leave. If I feel that I'm not getting something from it, I would leave.
Well, I hope at least selfishly that never becomes the case, because
I do too.
I am enjoying this relationship probably more than any other relationship I've had in my entire life. So
thank you.
And I think we're gonna round off the show on that lovely little note there, because that's
excellent.
It's drawing to a perfect close at this point. So, folks, stick around. The tables are going to be turned in the very next show.
Oh, they're so turned. Peter's out of the country, so I can really ask him anything.
Yeah, I'm going to be...
unedited, uncensored Peter Maverick.
Sitting under the magnifying glass,
an
praying for his
portrait.
Little son as possible. Under there. So, we hope that you'll stick with us, and we've got some great shows for you coming out the rest of the month, but I'm not going to tell you about them, because you'll know about them soon enough.
Yep.
All right, take care.
And thanks for listening to another Windy City Queercast. This show is brought to you in part by Bud Light. Bud Light, always worth it.
And American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow.
And Broadway in Chicago, for the hottest tickets in town, visit broadwayinchicago.com.
So that's our show. I'm Amy Matheny.
And I'm Peter Maverick. Please comment on our shows on our website and in iTunes.
The next Queercast is only days away, so don't miss it.
Windy City Queercast, queer and now.
The best and the brightest, served up daily by the sharpest minds in content delivery, Podshow and Limelight.